Welcome to Monday Morning Murder in the News with Alyssa Carroll.
Good morning, heathens. It's Friday, not Monday. But again, you guys are still sending me the things. All the things. So I'm just going to keep doing them. Our first article, I think, is going to be a silly one. We will have to see. It comes from thesmokinggun.com. And the title is Cops, Handcuffed Man, 73, Hit Officer with, quote, forcibly thrown cheeseburger. Yes, a handcuffed 73-year-old man somehow was able to forcibly, those are in quotes, throw a cheeseburger at a cop, leading to the suspect's arrest on a felony battery charge, records show. So police responded Wednesday night to a Wawa convenience store in Fort Pierce, Florida, quote, in reference to a subject being present who was previously trespassed, end quote. Since the trespass was still active, police arrested Joseph Delancey and placed him in handcuffs. Quote, during the detainment of Joseph, he was holding half of a cheeseburger, the officer reported. Quote, after being provided demands to drop said burger, he refused to do so. After the handcuffs were placed onto him, Joseph forcibly threw the burger right into my right leg, the cop added. The cheeseburger struck the patrolman, leaving behind burger residue on the thigh of the lawman, who survived the attack. Delancey was charged with trespassing, a misdemeanor, and battery on a law enforcement officer, which is a felony. He is locked up in lieu of $10,000 bond on the higher count. Delancey, seen at left, he just looks like a very stressed out older gent, has a lengthy rap sheet that includes convictions for attempted murder, fraud, and aggravated battery with a deadly weapon. He was arrested in 2022 for allegedly attempting to strike a cop with a metal pole. That's fantastic. The title to the next article just indicates that this particular murder in the news is just going to be a roller coaster. Buckle in, guys. This one, the next one, comes from NewYorkPost.com. The title reads, Wisconsin elementary school teacher, 24, busted for making out with a fifth grader 3 months before wedding. Mm-mm-mm. A 24-year-old Wisconsin elementary school teacher was arrested Wednesday for allegedly, quote, making out with her fifth grade student less than 3 months before her wedding, her own wedding. Madison Bergman's alleged abuse of the 11-year-old boy came to light when the student's mother overheard her son talking to the teacher on the phone, CBS News Minnesota reported. The victim's parents allegedly found texts between the pair, and the boy's father then stormed into Rivercrest Elementary School with printouts of the conversations. The deranged text chain included messages from Bergman allegedly discussing multiple encounters inside the classroom during lunch or after school. She is also accused of telling the child how much she enjoyed him touching her and making out, the charging documents state. Inside her bag, well, like, here's her mugshot. She just looks like a scared, she definitely looks scared, like she's been crying. Inside her bag, police also found a folder with the victim's name on it, containing many handwritten notes talking about how much they kissed one another, the charges allege. In one of the letters, Bergman allegedly wrote, quote, one of my cousins is in the fifth grade, and I can't imagine a man talking to her how we talk. I know we have a special relationship, and I do love you more than anyone in the world, but I have to be the adult here and stop. End quote. It's not clear how long the abuse had been going on, but Bergman told investigators she was given the boy's phone number by his mother in December when his family invited who they thought was a beloved teacher with them to the Afton Alps for winter break. That was the same month she became engaged to her longtime boyfriend, her social media shows. She was given the boy's phone number by his mother in December, but that was not giving you freaking permission. According to the document, when officers asked about text exchanges between the two, Bergman invoked her right to an attorney. The accused pervert has since been placed on administrative leave and barred from contacting any district students, parents, or staff, the Hudson School District told parents the same day as her arrest. Quote, learning about a school staff member and alleged inappropriate conduct that breaches trust is deeply troubling for all of us, the message states. According to her social media, Bergman was set to be married in July, less than 3 months from when she was arrested. She began teaching there in 2022. Can't wait for school start, she ominously wrote. She was released on a $25,000 signature bond. She faces one count of first-degree child sexual assault. Good Lord. All right, our next article comes from People.com, and the title is Inside, the disturbing case of a New York couple whose remains were found scattered across three locations. Malcolm or Craig Brown, 53, and Donna Connelly, 59, were fatally stabbed and dismembered inside an Amityville, New York home on February 27th, authorities say. That's Amityville, New York. Guys! Okay, let's see. Four people have been indicted on multiple charges after the dismembered remains of a New York couple were found scattered across three locations, two of which were parks. Jeffrey Mackey, 36, Alexis Neves, 33, Stephen Brown, 44, and Amanda Wallace, 40, were all formally charged by a Suffolk County grand jury. Suffolk County District Attorney Raymond A. Tierney announced in a press release on Monday, April 29th. Mackey and Neves are the only suspects currently charged with second-degree murder, according to the indictment reviewed by People. They also face charges of conspiracy, robbery, hindering prosecution, tampering with physical evidence, and concealment of a human corpse. And they only got second degree murder? While in court on Tuesday, Mackey and Neves pleaded not guilty. The other suspects, Brown and Wallace, also pleaded not guilty to charges including conspiracy, robbery, hindering prosecution, tampering with physical evidence, and concealment of a human corpse, according to the Journal News. According to the release, Mackey, Neves, and Brown allegedly planned to kill Malcolm Craig Brown, 53, and Donna Connelly, 59, both of Yonkers, New York, before they arrived at an Amityville, New York home on February 27th. So he planned it, and it's still only second degree murder. That's okay. The victims, who Tierney says were acquaintances of the suspects, were, quote, violently stabbed. Per the release, Tierney alleged that the victims were involved in the plotting of a knife point robbery at a gas station on February 20th, which may have resulted in their murders. He added that Malcolm Craig Brown is a cousin of suspect Stephen Brown, per the outlet. The plot thickens, my friends. Quote, Brown was stabbed once in the neck and once in the torso, while Connelly was stabbed multiple times in the neck and back, Tierney wrote in the release. The defendants then allegedly dismembered the victims' bodies in the bathroom of the home and then dumped the remains in Southard's Pond Park, Bethpage State Park, and a wooded area in West Babylon, the prosecutor added. So on February 29th, a witness discovered a dismembered male arm in a brush, in the brush, at Southard's Pond Park in Babylon Village. Once there, law enforcement recovered a second male arm near the first, as well as a female head and torso, a female arm, and parts of female legs on the opposite side of the park. Investigators were then led to the Amityville home, where all four suspects had reportedly been staying. Inside, police recovered a large folding knife, a large kitchen knife, and two meat cleavers. This is disturbing. Authorities also claimed they found blood in multiple locations throughout the home. All four suspects were arrested on March 4th, but were released from jail without bail because the criminal offenses they were initially charged with were considered non-bail eligible under state law. What? This meant that the prosecutors could not ask for bail and judges could not set it. Mackey's attorney, John Halverson, said this week, per ABC 7 New York, quote, "I believe that the prosecution's witnesses at this point, as I've stated at the arraignment, have unclean hands, and that's going to be our position going forward," end quote. I think I agree. Neves' attorney, Christopher Joy, maintained his client's innocence, according to the outlet. Keith O'Halloran, an attorney for Wallace, told KKTV that he's glad his client hasn't been charged with murder. People couldn't immediately identify an attorney for Brown. That is insane. Wow. I thought there would be another goofy one, but I literally open these in the order that they're sent to me. So it's very random. And then I don't read them on top of that. So we are experiencing this together, multidimensional. So the next one comes from abc15.com. The title reads, "Former basketball coach, prominent Valley sports fan, Mr. Orng, O-R-N-G, Orange, arrested on sex crime charges because, of course, Patrick Batilo has since been dismissed from the district." Phoenix. So this article is coming out of Phoenix. Former Peoria High School basketball coach and prominent Valley sports fan known as Mr. Orng has been arrested on charges related to child sex crimes, according to the Maricopa County Sheriff's Office. Boy, Maricopa County. Good Lord. Patrick Batilo was arrested Tuesday, according to MCSO. On Tuesday morning, the Peoria Police Department was made aware of a sexual offense investigation regarding an employee at Peoria High School. Peoria PD officials say school administrators learned 37-year-old Batilo had possibly solicited several inappropriate photos and videos from underage students in exchange for money. During an investigation, detectives spoke with the people involved and learned Batilo had been asking the juvenile victims to send videos and photos of themselves in various sex acts and various states of nudity, according to the police. He was the head boys basketball coach and a volunteer at the school. He was arrested in Goodyear and later booked into Maricopa County Jail on several charges, including luring a minor for sexual exploitation and child sex trafficking. Officials say a second employee, 46-year-old Holly Holgate, was arrested for hindering prosecution and failing to report child abuse or neglect after she reportedly gave Batilo a heads up that police were looking for him, allowing him to leave the school before he could be arrested. Shame. Batilo has been going to Phoenix Suns games dressed completely in orange for more than a decade and garnered popularity among fans, even being featured in NBA commercials and social media posts. Oh, that sounds familiar. An investigation is ongoing. ABC 15 will continue to follow the case, blah, blah, blah. Wow. Man. It's just, they're coming after our kids from every possible angle. It's just so depressing. Okay, so our next one comes from Fox32Chicago.com. And the title reads, "No charges in Massachusetts after four newborns found frozen, wrapped in tinfoil inside Boston Airport," according to the DA. So in a shocking move, the Suffolk District Attorney in Massachusetts announced on Tuesday that there will be no criminal charges filed in connection to the investigation involving the disturbing discovery of four newborn babies found wrapped in tinfoil inside a freezer in the home of a Boston woman who, quote, concealed her pregnancies. This investigation, which is one of the most complex, unusual, and perplexing that this office has ever encountered, is now complete. While we have some answers, there are many elements of this case that will likely never be answered, DA Kevin Hayden said in a press release. On the afternoon of November 17, 2022, Boston police responded to a home for a 911 call about a possible baby located inside a freezer. The call was later updated to involve multiple babies. The caller explained that he and his wife made the grisly discovery while cleaning out his sister's South Boston apartment. Investigators determined that the apartment was owned and occupied by 69-year-old Alexis Aldemir. In all, four babies were discovered that day. Investigators said all four were frozen solid in shoe boxes wrapped in foil. Two were male and two were female, and DNA tests determined that they were all siblings. They were also believed to be between 37 and 40 weeks, meaning that they could have survived outside of the womb. The medical examiner reported that there was no scientific method to determine how long the babies had been frozen. The autopsy found no signs of internal or external trauma and no evidence of obvious injuries. The report also noted that there were no signs of food or milk or formula inside the babies' stomachs. The medical examiner also found the cause of death for all the babies to be undetermined and that it could not definitively determine whether the babies had been born alive. Investigators were able to locate Aldemir in a residential health care facility and eventually gained a court order to obtain a DNA sample. The results confirmed she was the mother of the four babies. Co-workers of Aldemir, who was employed by an accounting firm in Boston from March 1980 to October 2021, described her as a heavyset woman who had a penchant for wearing loose-fitting clothing regardless of the season. I mean, they don't have to call me out like that, you know. They also told investigators that they had no idea that she was pregnant. Additional DNA testing revealed that the father of all four babies had died in 2011 and that Aldemir had given birth to one baby girl in April of 1982. Investigators also found two parental rights surrender forms, one signed by Aldemir and the other signed by the individual determined to be the father of the four frozen babies. Through their investigation, officials determined that Aldemir had five children with the same man and that they gave one of their children up for adoption. The other four were found in the freezer. So anyway, investigation is ongoing. Oh, this next article is going to piss all of us off. I just saw the title. I don't read them, but I saw the title and instantly I was like, oh, hell no. You guys will be with me. This is coming from the LATimes.com, Los Angeles Times. Title reads, Homeowners Sue L.A. for Right to Demolish Marilyn Monroe's House. This is a real article. In January, fans and conservationists celebrated when the Los Angeles Cultural Heritage Commission recommended landmark status for Marilyn Monroe's home, a crucial step in saving the residence from being demolished. My question is, why was it not already on there? Why was it not already on, like, landmark status? I don't understand that. The new homeowners of the Brentwood property were less ecstatic. They sued the city of LA on Monday for the right to demolish it, claiming that city officials acted unconstitutionally in their efforts to designate the home as a landmark and accusing them of backdoor machinations in trying to preserve a house that doesn't meet the criteria for status as a historic cultural monument. But that's where she died. Everyone knows who Marilyn Monroe is. Gen Z knows who Marilyn Monroe is. She died in that house. It's not that she just lived there, like, she died there. The lawsuit comes from heiress Brina Milstein, and her husband, reality TV producer Roy Bank, who bought the Spanish colonial-style home last summer for $8.35 million. That seems low for LA and that it's Marilyn Monroe's house, and immediately laid out plans to raise it. They owned the house next door and hoped to combine the two properties to expand their place, according to the lawsuit. Monroe bought the house in 1962 for $75,000 and died there 6 months later after an apparent overdose at the age of 36. The air quotes, an apparent drug overdose, apparent, because I don't believe that. But anyway, moving on. Fans and conservationists claim the residence is a part of Hollywood history and a physical reminder of Monroe's legacy. I agree. Milstein and Bank disagree. Their lawsuit claims that the home has had 14 owners since Monroe's death and has been substantially altered, with over a dozen permits issued for various remodels over the last 60 years. Well, now that's that. Quote, there is not a single piece of that house that includes any physical evidence that Miss Monroe ever spent a day at that house. Not a piece of furniture, not a paint chip, not a carpet, nothing, the lawsuit says. The house isn't visible from the street, but that hasn't stopped it from becoming a tourist hotspot. Fans and tour buses flock to the property to snap pictures of the privacy wall, which the lawsuit claims is a nuisance to the neighborhood. The battle over the home has been brewing since September of 23, when the city issued a demolition permit to those two on September 7th. The public outcry was swift, and L.A. City Council member Tracy Park said she received hundreds of emails and phone calls urging her office to initiate the process of declaring the home a historic cultural monument in order to save it. Park held a news conference titled Marilyn Monroe Home Preservation the next day, delivering an impassioned speech while wearing red lipstick and short blonde hair in a nod to Monroe. After the speech, the city council voted to begin the landmark consideration process, nullifying the demolition permits. The council will vote to officially on whether to declare, that doesn't make sense, the house a historic cultural monument this summer. The goal of the lawsuit is to cancel that vote and restore the right to demolish the property. While addressing the Cultural Heritage Commission in January, Milstein suggested relocating the home rather than designating it a landmark. It's unclear whether that option is still possible. Now, I mean, if we're all going to talk about compromise, and you know, I'm sure I'll be read to filth, but like, if you can keep the home intact and just like scoop it up and, you know, right down the highway, and, you know, I mean, it's still the house she was in, right? I don't know. Quote, in the 8 years that we have lived next door, we have seen the property change owners 2 times. We have watched it go unmaintained and unkept. We purchased the property because it's within feet of ours, and it is not a historical cultural monument. Calm down. So anyway, it sparked a lot of outrage, and that was a big deal. So hopefully they don't get to do that. I know that sounds terrible, but nah, I really don't want them to. Our next article comes from CBSNews.com. Title reads, 22-year-old arrested for sexually assaulting elderly woman in her own home. Fantastic. Los Angeles police arrested a 22-year-old man for allegedly sexually assaulting an 81-year-old woman who suffered from Alzheimer's. That just makes my skin crawl. The alleged attack happened on April 29th in the 12600 block of Pierce Street in Pacoima. Detectives from the Los Angeles Police Department said the man knocked on the victim's door before she let him into her apartment. Once inside, the suspect, Walker Gabriel Munoz, attacked the woman and tried to sexually assault the woman, according to police. The 81-year-old was taken to a local hospital where doctors conducted a sexual assault exam. Detectives arrested him on May 3rd without incident. They booked him into the Metropolitan Detention Center for kidnapping with the intent to commit rape. He is being held in lieu of a $2.125 million bail. Disgusting. Utterly disgusting. All right, our next article comes from KTLA5, LA's very own. And the title reads, Southern California authorities solve 33-year-old cold case murder. Police in Ventura County have announced that they solved a murder case which had gone unsolved for over 3 decades. According to the Ventura Police Department, the body of 42-year-old Danielle Claus was found on a hillside at the top of Tioga Drive in Ventura on July 16, 1991. An autopsy revealed Claus had been sexually assaulted and had died due to multiple blunt force injuries to her head. Bless. Quote, once investigators at the time explored every avenue, the case was suspended and considered cold, the Ventura Police Department said in a media release. A breakthrough in the case came 30 years later, in 2021, when detectives and forensic specialists retested crime scene evidence for DNA by using forensic genetic genealogy technology that didn't exist in the 90s. They were able to piece together a family tree and verify distinct characteristics of the suspect by using phenotyping. Based on the new evidence, detectives identified the suspect as Larry Devin Welch. Welch, who had no known connection to this woman, died in 1999. Klaus's family is grateful that they finally have closure after 33 long years of not knowing what happened to her. Oh, did he get away with it? Did he get away with it? Oh, yeah, I did find another goofy one. This one comes from wearegreenbay.com, and the title reads, Green Bay man named D's Nuts appears in court, pleads not guilty, and signs $11,000 signature bond. Green Bay, Wisconsin. A man in Green Bay with a one-of-a-kind first name was back in court and reportedly pleaded not guilty to his two charges. According to court records, 42-year-old D's Nuts Kroll was back in court on May 2nd for a return on warrant. He reportedly entered not guilty pleas to all counts. Additionally, he reportedly signed his signature bond, which was set at $11,000. Kroll is scheduled to be back in court on May 20th for a status conference. He is facing two charges, battery and disorderly conduct. Both are misdemeanors. The charges stem from an alleged incident that happened back on March 5th. The criminal complaint said there was a reported disturbance and Kroll allegedly ended up getting a gun. The gun reportedly turned out to be a CO2 carbon dioxide BB gun. I'm not hip to that stuff. I mean, I know about guns, but anyway. Yep, so his name is D's Nuts. He had to have had that done on purpose. He had to have changed his name legally. It's just D's hyphen Nuts. I don't know if that's... Is that just his last name? Oh, no, that's his, like, two first names because his last name is Kroll. Got it. Okay, our next one and our last one. I know. Calm down. I'll keep them coming. It comes from one of my international listeners. Thank you so much. It comes from news.err.ee. And then sidebar, have some patience and empathy because this had to be translated to English and I didn't read it ahead of time. So patience. Okay, so it says PPA, mother in Sur La True baby case found in Morocco. A woman sought by the police and border guard board, PPA, in the case of an infant found deceased in Lane County last month, has been located in faraway Morocco, said the authorities on Monday. So on February 5th this year, a family's pet dog brought back the body of a deceased infant in its mouth in the village of Sur La True, Lane Nagula municipality, and others, sparking a major police and border guard board search. The mystery over the identity of the newborn's mother and her whereabouts and well-being remained, however, until now, it seems. The North Africa Post reports that the General Directorate of National Security of Morocco, y'all are testing me with this stuff, but I love it, announced on Sunday that an Estonian woman, which the authority says is wanted for murder, had been arrested in the Dakhla region, which lies in the disputed region of Western Sahara. following cooperation via the International Criminal Police Organization, which is Interpol. We all know what that is. The suspect, aged 31, was sought by Interpol at the request of Estonian judicial authorities, the North Africa Post reported, and had been declared wanted under a red notice, that's in quotes, due to alleged involvement in voluntary homicide. The woman was placed in custody, pending her extradition to Estonia. Back in Estonian Kato Koplas, please don't butcher me, head of the Police and Border Guard Board's Western Prefecture, confirmed to reporters on Monday that the mother had been located in Morocco, adding, quote, as far as we know, she is at the police station there and is alive and well. Why wasn't she with her kid? The mother's identity was established based on DNA samples, revealing that she is a 30-year-old Estonian citizen, while her whereabouts were determined thanks to international cooperation, after which she was detained by the Moroccan authorities. The next task is extradition back to Estonia, though, given that Morocco is not an EU member state, this may take a lengthy period of time and is predicated on a decision from the state of Morocco. See, I think this is good sidebar. I think this is good for us learning a little bit more about the geography outside of the United States. That's the biggest chunk of my audience. I just think this is good for us. So at present, it is not clear if the detained woman is the victim of a crime and/or of mistreatment, whether she traveled to Morocco voluntarily, and whether she went there to intentionally evade authorities or for some other reason. So they don't know what's going on. These and other facts will be examined on taking a statement from the woman. So the guy said the PPA currently does not know why the woman's pregnancy and childbirth took place without medical assistance, and again, whether she herself could be the victim of a crime. Evidence gathering will include a new terrain search in the area in which the deceased infant was found. Oh, quote, the fact that the woman has been located is a major step forward in the ongoing procedure, but noting that it is in any case far from over. The criminal procedure to investigate what exactly happened to the woman and the child will continue with more routine activities, German said. These criminal proceedings are being overseen by the prosecutor's office, Western District, in the context of the section of the penal code dealing with infanticide, meaning infant murder. This categorization may change in the course of criminal proceedings, blah, blah, blah. Wow. Well, now I'm invested. Okay, and then I still have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. You guys just keep sending them to me, and then we'll have another one on Monday. So I hope everyone had a decent week. It was not super great, coming from the closet of shame, but we persevere. That's what we do. So, and then you guys that were off, I hope my people were nice to you, and then you're working the weekends. Thank you for your sacrifice. And I will talk to you all soon. Love you guys so much. Bye.